Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, another podcast this week. I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Jameem.
Hello, everyone.
So, what we're going to do this week, with the obvious massive Scotland game coming later this week, we're going to give that more time than we normally give Scotland games on the pod. So, in the first sort of part, we've all picked a Premiership game from the last game week each, and we're going to sort of run through those. So only three games going through this week, and then in the sort of second part, we're going to give the game on Thursday a bit more of an extensive preview. So we'll start with the game that Harry picked, and I don't think it'll come as much shock that you've picked Rangers 8, Hamilton 0. So, I mean, let's kick this off. What do you want to say about Brian Rice's team this week?
Yeah, I mean, in normal circumstances, I'd probably say, I mean, Rangers, and first of all, we should say that Rangers were good in this game. Although at the same time, I don't even think this is the best they've played all season. Hamilton, most coaches in the world who are setting up with a back three, back five, whatever you want to call it. In this case, it's more of a back five on paper anyway. They go for that for additional defensive solidity, as I was telling you guys beforehand. Not Brian Rice, because he sets up with this system, and this has to be one of the worst performances I've ever seen in the top flight. I don't understand. We've discussed how Hamilton and Brian Rice, well, Brian Rice is considered by some in the media as a great coach. I mean, we've seen constantly this season that's not the case. He doesn't seem to be able to coach this system at all. In any defensive situation in this game, they were completely all at sea in transition when trying to defend in a low block, as we will get onto. And also balls into the box, they were incredibly weak, which is obviously a massive disappointment considering the height they've got in the back line. I think this defence is potentially the worst that I've ever seen in the Scottish top flight.
So yeah, you said that Brian Rice has got some praise, right? So I'm just going to read out some quotes from Steven Gerrard before the game. So he said, Brian is someone I've got the utmost respect for because he backs his players. He plays really positively. Every time we've played them, he comes with a threat that means that they don't have a single shot on goal on Sunday, but whatever. He said, he has them organised, of course. I mean, they looked really organised on Sunday. He'll try and be organised and have men behind the ball, but one thing that goes without saying is that Brian always comes and carries a threat. I mean,
yeah, like you said, zero shots, let alone shots on target. They didn't even have a corner in the game, and they only had 23% possession. This was just abysmal across the board. Like, the only people you could maybe feel sorry for in the Hamilton team are the forwards, but even then, there's just nothing. The midfield, I've already said enough about the defence, but the midfield seemed to be bypassed with one pass every single time Rangers came forward. It's lucky it was only 8, because this is just a dreadful performance.
I'm thinking Rangers is too upfront for in a game like this, because may as well get another man back behind the ball. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And obviously, if you're not even going to get the ball to them, then what's the point? You know, even if you do get the ball, it's clearly nothing stuck, because they've not really mounted any threat at all on the Rangers. Well, I'm kind of disappointed to see that kind of Gerrard there sounding a bit like, almost like one of the sort of the Pals act on kind of like sports him or something. Ah, but Chipper's a good lad, isn't he? Well, a little disappointed from him. I know you're not going to go out and slate him or anything, but do you really need to say that? I mean, he's not really backed up your sort of praise of him either.
Yeah, I'm just, when I was watching the highlights to this, I I just didn't really think there was a sign that, that tells you what Hamilton were even trying to do here. As you said, there has sort of the defensive shape was just awful. It looks like a defence that had never played a single minute together. I mean, it looks like a defence I've never even sort of trained together. Don't even know each other. It was just guys just flying out of position. I think it's the first goal, and almost as the ball's crossed, all Hamilton centre halves are on the sort of the 18-yard line. It's just there's absolutely no cohesion to that at all.
Again, you see, and we've said this before, but a Dolphin has zero positional discipline. He comes out and effectively tackles his own man in the build-up to that. At that point, against a team like Rangers, who have the penetration and the ability to pick a pass like they do, it's over. You've already conceded. And like you said, they didn't look like they'd even trained together. Well, this is Ben Sterling's third appearance in a Hamilton shirt. He's maybe one who does have a future. He's been capped at the Scotland under 17 level, but when you're throwing him in with guys like Brian Easton and a Dolphin from a defensive standpoint, he's just on a hide into nothing. He's not going to succeed.
Yeah, it's just it's a massive worry for them. There was times in the game, and I guess this could probably go two ways, whether it's just awful marking or a wee bit of praise towards like Ryan Kent and his sort of positional awareness. But it was just striking to me how open and free he was so often. It was if I was setting my team up, I wouldn't be going sort of man to man against Rangers, because that's almost a you're on a hide into nothing there. But maybe at least have someone sort of man marking Kent, because he was just he's been so dangerous throughout the season, and there was just so many times like he was just picking the ball up even in the box, and he's got like no one within 5 yards of him. It's just absolutely atrocious. I mean, it's I guess we're sitting here and absolutely slating Hamilton, and we can obviously talk about budgets and stuff like that, and they've probably got the lowest in the league, and you're not really expecting them to do an awful lot this season. But without going sort of like full Roy Keane or anything here, there was times when there's players attempting to block shots, and it was just a sort of a half-arsed, like, it's just sort of flick the foot out and hope for the best. I mean, times where you could have maybe thrown a leg in, thrown your body in, and you could have blocked the ball. I think a few of these occasions they might have came when it was sort of 3-4-0 already, and they're probably thinking, Jesus, let's just get out of here. But they're getting worse by the week. What's that, 20 goals?
Yeah, the other thing is though, Rory, when you're saying they're already 3-4 down, but that's an issue for the coach. He's got to keep the players motivated, and they need to get out there with some pride. Like I said, you don't want to go full Roy Keane here, but like you're saying, for the fifth goal, they finally set up with 10 men in their own box, including the goalkeeper. Okay, so you're denying Rangers space in theory, but then, like I was saying to you guys, they've chipped one cross to the back post for Jermaine Defoe. Scott McMahon has literally just looked over his shoulder, seen him there, and then he lets the ball drop over his head. And, you know, he half-heartedly sticks a leg out to try and stop it. But he knows he's there, and he's basically not putting any effort to divert the cross. And then the next goal, he comes close to blocking it, but it just looks like there's not a lot of drive or, you know, pride in the shirt. And we've given Hamilton a right slaying, but you'd be completely raging about that if you're a Hamilton fan to see them just basically. I mean, this is down in tools.
Absolutely. I mean, Ronnie was obviously mentioned there about Kent getting a lot of time and space. Not the only one. I mean, every Rangers player got so much time and space. Anytime you got the ball, there was nobody within, for the most part, nobody within 3 or 4 yards of them. And it's just acres and acres of space. And when you are playing so deep, surely you've got to at least shut down the space when they get the ball in the final third. And even that wasn't the case. They just just outside the box, putting in crosses, and there's nobody goes to shut the cross down, nobody picks up the men. It looks like a team who, yeah, they're just, there's no pride in the play at all. And even you know, like you said, you were guys saying, don't go Roy Keane, fool Roy Keane. Even someone, show a bit of pride. Go and, as Roy Keane says, go and smash somebody. You know, it's just, I mean, at least when you go and smash somebody, you kind of show that you've got a little bit of pride, you want to do something, you want to at least put a mark on someone. But everything's just so passive. And just so disappointing, and it's also the fact that there's now sort of stages in games where, you know, they're losing, they're just losing loads of goals in such a short period of time. You think back to the Aberdeen game where they lost 4 goals in about 20 minutes. Here they lost 3 goals in 4 minutes, and later on in the game I think they lose another 4. In a sort of in a 15-minute period as well, so it's clearly if they're one goal, the heads totally go down, and they're just struggling to come back from that. And they were very very lucky; it didn't reach double figures.
And the other thing is, if we're gonna say, like so many others won't, that Brian Rice isn't a great coach, he clearly isn't a great man motivator. In that case, like what? Where is the inspiration that he's given his players? Because also after the game, his comments are just completely deluded about, you know, comparing Hamilton to Southampton. It's just mindless stuff. I just don't understand what's going on there.
Yeah, I think we'll move on before you get yourself worked up into a serious shoot there, Haz, and say something you might regret in the future. So.
And also, I'd like to say that Ryan Fulton had a disaster in goals.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's.
I've put down in my notes, Sir spills a lot.
I mean, that's we'll let that part of slide. So, yeah, as I said, we're not going to let you go full Jim Cornette here and get so, and start a sort of feud with like a Vince.
Brian Wright is. Vince Russo to me.
Yeah. Oh, Brian Rice on a pole match. That's anyway, we'll shift on. So we'll shift on to Christie's game. You chose Aberdeen 2, Hibs 0. You sent a picture into our group chat earlier of a sort of still from this game. And I'm not sure it was too surprising what that sort of moment was. So yeah. Let's hear what you've got to say about this game.
Just another time Portis has chucked in at Pataudry. Hibs just really couldn't, especially the back line. Basically, all the opportunities Aberdeen had created, and obviously got the 2 goals from, a lot of them would come from just putting pressure on Hibs in the final third, and they really, really couldn't cope with it. You know, the first goal comes from, I think Hibs were trying to overplay as well, when they really should have just got rid of it. Fair play to Hedges for putting the pressure on Murphy, and Aberdeen eventually carve out a really good, obviously a good score, but it's a really really good goal. But the second one, from Portis, I mean, I don't even know what he's thinking, because the ball at Paul McGinn is so obviously on, as Aberdeen have kind of retreated a little bit. And he tries to go for the big sort of the World Cup switch ball, and just makes a total loss of it, really. Blocks it at Ferguson, Paul Hamlin's too deep, and Cosgrove comes through. But you know, at the same time, Hibs, because Aberdeen put the pressure on, Hibs offered absolutely nothing going forward. I think that their best opportunity was when Ash Taylor sliced the clearance. The Joe Lewis had to pop over the bar, and a lot of that is just due to the pressure Aberdeen had on the ball from front to back. The defensive line always, maybe the possible exception of once when Boyle got behind, they looked really really comfortable. And now for Hibs, it's the mentality aspect is probably beginning to come into question, because that's 2 big games they've now played in succession, and they've come up well short in them both.
Yeah, to go back to the first goal there, I really like this goal. I think there's a point you can just pause it still, and there's about six Aberdeen players that have just closed down Hibs into the sort of bottom left corner of their own half. And yeah, the bodies they had down there, it kind of obviously forced Hibs back into that area of the pitch, and you dropped a guy in there like Jamie Murphy, and probably not a sort of familiar position of the pitch to him, and he just makes an unforced error, really, and that's what sort of pressing an opponent pretty high can do. And one of the things for Scott Wright this season is he's obviously been playing much better, but a lack of goals is probably the only criticism you could have of him. And I think that's I would say that's a finish of someone who is pretty high on confidence. You wouldn't have looked at that and thought, yeah, that guy's sort of spurned a few opportunities in recent weeks, like with the few one-on-ones he's missed. But yeah, really tidy finish, and I think it's a really tidy goal, I guess, all round for Aberdeen. But yeah, moving on to the second goal, it's just, again, it's unforced from Porteous. I don't really know why he's wanting to sort of to force the issue there. He can just be a bit patient, play the ball out wide to Paul McGinn, and I mean, it's a great finish from Cosgrove in the end, but I'm not sure that diagonal was even on in the first place. So it's poor decision making from Porteous. It's, I guess, still relatively young, rather, and it's something he'll learn. But mistakes he needs to kind of cut out his game pretty sharp if Hibs want to be sort of competing for third in the league.
I think, I mean, for both goals, really, it comes down to, like you said, I mean, I think Aberdeen's shape set them up well to press high and force mistakes, but Hibs, I think, were a little bit over-insistent on playing it out from the back. In both cases, I think, like you said, Porteous could easily shift it out to the right, but he's kind of going for, like you said, Christy, a bit of a Hollywood pass. If they're going to do that, he has to be a lot quicker, you know, just pick up the ball, ping it out there. I think the ball is on. If you look at it, there's a bit of space because of some of the runs that are ahead of the man there. Just creates a little bit of space for the left wing back there to move into. But yeah, I mean, he's just delayed for too long. It's not on anymore. But yeah, I just think Jack Ross will be furious about this because it's not like they've been completely outplayed by Aberdeen on the day. It's just poor decision making, an over reliance on something that you shouldn't be doing, especially early on in a game away from home. You need to settle into the game before you start playing out from the back, in my view. I'm a fan of it generally. If you beat the press, obviously that gives you plenty of advantages going forward, but it's knowing when to do it. And I think, like you said, Porteous is somewhat inexperienced, but you can't be making those sorts of mistakes.
Even then, I mean, you said obviously the goals, and you know, Hibs do then have the best part of 18 minutes to go and try and get themselves back into the game, and it just didn't look like they were going to at any stage at all. This is the best chance game from Ash Taylor slicing a clearance over the bar. Then they didn't really get another, what I would say, a great opportunity until the end of the game, where he makes a really good block in the last minute after Shea Logan's given it away in the wide area. So, I mean, I can't see, like, I don't think they were really outplayed at any time, but, you know, Aberdeen got themselves ahead really early on. And then just kept Hibs at an arm's length for the rest of the game, which I think is something that I've quite often criticised McInnes for doing early on, but here he just totally stifled. Aberdeen totally stifled Hibs. They offered, like I said, they offered absolutely nothing, and it's kind of been Achilles heel Aberdeen a little bit this year, and it's been able to keep that clean sheet, like we said about Hamilton, where the Hamilton game we mentioned earlier, where Aberdeen, they did try and drop back, but it clearly didn't work because Hamilton obviously got themselves in, got a couple of goals. Whereas here, like I say, basically it was like sort of, you know, dangling a carrot in front of Ibs and basically never being able to go and get it.
Yeah, I think the thing is as well, what we've mentioned about the Porteous distribution, there's a chance in the second half where he almost sells, well, he does sell Marciano pretty short with a back pass, which Hedges intercepts, and yeah, it's just sort of unenforced errors, as I said earlier, that they really need to cut out. It's but yeah, more to what you said about lacking a threat, I think it's, I wouldn't really want to sort of focus on an individual error that doesn't really come to anything, but you know the Shea Logan clearance towards the end, that kind of just says to me, yep, yeah, that's why you're not playing every week, that's why wingers are playing the sort of wing back position instead of a full back, you're just totally done at this level. But yeah, wouldn't sort of want to dig him out massively for it, but yeah, I don't know if you thought that was really poor from him as well.
Yeah,
sorry, what you say there, I'd actually put more of the blame on Paul Hanlon. I think he's actually sold Porteous quite short with his pass. I'm not sure that he's ever gonna get there with it. Fair play to Porteous, I hate saying that, but he actually does come back and make amends with a tackle just before it comes to, I think it's McCrory. But yeah, I mean, you've got, at this stage, you've clearly struggled to play it from the back a lot of the game, and you have been caught quite high up. Maybe it's time to just move the ball quick and don't allow Aberdeen to get up there and to make it difficult for you to play out.
Yeah, exactly. I think, to your point, Rory, about the wingers playing the wing-back roles, in this sort of game where Hibs are, that's the way they're going to play. They're going to try and build from the back. That's the exact scenario you'd want when you've got two wingers in those positions, because it allows them to be aggressive, press high up the pitch, and it worked fairly consistently for Aberdeen. It wasn't like Hibs ever went direct and tried to get the ball beyond the wing backs in any real way. But yeah, to your point about the mistake from Logan, yeah, I mean, I just think that he is somewhat finished at this level, and yeah, I mean, it's no surprise that he's not playing every week. But yeah, I think aside from that, and aside from maybe a slightly questionable challenge from Kennedy in the box, Aberdeen were really impressive defensively, like really focused. Obviously gave up a lot of possession, but didn't allow Hibs to really get anywhere with it.
Yeah, I was going to put that to you. There was a couple of incidents with Kennedy on Boyle. The first one being the penalty shout that Hibs were sort of, the Hibs players seemed pretty adamant about. I'm not 100% sure on it. I think he's already kind of halfway, he's almost on his knees anyway when he falls over. I think it's probably one of them that, I don't think Kennedy would have too many complaints if it was given against him, but on the other hand, it would still be a wee bit soft. I think Hibs have more of a claim for the sort of foul on the edge of the box from Kennedy on Boyle, but ultimately they're kind of clutching at straws if they think that's
because Jack Ross brought that up in his post-match interview, and he was talking about that. But I'm thinking, well, he's maybe looking for the tree kicking the red card for Kennedy. But then you think, I can't remember if it was before or after it, when Scott Wright beats Paul Hanlon later on in the game, which is going through, will eventually through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and he only gets the yellow. That slipped his mind when he was talking about that. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of clutching at straws. And at that stage, I mean, if your gripe is not getting a free kick when you're 2-0 down and you've not yet had a shot at goal, you know, you can't really complain about getting beat.
Yeah, a good win for Aberdeen, pretty routine, I think you would say, overall. But for Hibs and Jack Ross, another sort of disappointing result to kind of make it two pretty poor results on the spin. They've got Dundee this weekend in the League Cup, but then following that in the league they do have Celtic. the as you said, the positive start that they've made, that kind of could be, I wouldn't say it would be beginning to sort of unravel or anything. I think they're probably comfortable enough to finish fourth, but for Hibs, you would have liked to have maybe kept a wee bit of a push going for Aberdeen. You wouldn't want a gap to sort of start opening up, and I have a feeling that gap could begin to start beginning to get a bit greater between Aberdeen and Hibs.
It could do, but I still think if Hibs were to finish fourth this season, regardless of what the gap is, that's still progress in the right direction for them. I think we probably said at the start of the season that that was kind of the minimum. I think if they get fourth place, they can't be too disappointed. Sorry, it's still a relatively new system, new players adapting to that system. I think we don't want to go too overboard here, because I think for Hibs to have established themselves as, I would suggest anyway, comfortably better than all of the sides below them, that is certainly progress.
Yeah, maybe we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves here. I mean, they're still 7 points ahead of fifth with a game in hand over Dundee United, so it's not all doom and gloom, I guess, but we'll move.
The other thing I would say is he definitely does need to have a plan B when it comes to distribution of the ball, because if he does that against Celtic again, they have the shape to accommodate a lot of attacking players that will press high. If he does that against Celtic, it's not going to go well again. And he does have the physicality up front to go long at times when it suits. Doidge is very good in the air, and I think Nisbet's very good in the air too. So I just think he's got to change it up sometimes.
Hmm. Christy, any final thoughts before we move on?
No, just that. Portis, lol.
We'll leave it at that. So, to round off the Premiership stuff, I chose Motherwell 1, Celtic 4. Not in the sense that this is sort of a result that totally saves Lennon from any pressure on his job, but I think it's not a lifeline, but it's just a wee bit of a handy boost for them, given what has been a pretty sort of horrible month or so for Celtic. I don't think they were particularly great in this game. I think Motherwell were pretty poor defensively and allowed them for sure a couple of soft goals, but there was a couple of decent individual performances from Celtic. I thought that most of their good stuff was coming through Frimpong, which I guess isn't a massive surprise given, well, for me anyway, while they've been on pretty poor form, Frimpong's been one of the sort of positives from this run. LUNC obviously got his hat-trick. I'm not going to go near the sort of answering the call line, because it's just...
I kind of hoped he would celebrate them by, you know, like the sort of like the phone gesture with your hand.
That's a missed opportunity for sure.
Was desperate for it. I mean, the nonsense was it Paul Lambert talking about
he's let down Jock Steen.
What a nonsense!
Right. So, I mean, the game itself was, despite being five goals in total, I wouldn't say it was massively eventful. But to cover that, right, watching a few of the sort of the recent Celtic games, so where they have been poor, I thought in the semi-final, LUNC obviously gets a goal. Thought he was pretty good, yet gets hooked. So if you're him, you're thinking I'm not sure why I'm getting hooked again. And I think Rogic stayed on the pitch that day, and he wasn't sort of that influential. Then against Rangers, even further back, he should do better with his chance. He gets hooked. And then you fast forward to Sparta Prague on Thursday night, where obviously the phone incident occurred. He gets hooked in that game, where Rogic again was kept on the pitch, yet doing nothing, when El Yunusi was actually looking sort of half creative are more creative than Rogic for sure. I mean, for a guy who's obviously he's not a permanent Celtic player, you would get a wee bit annoyed that you're just consistently getting subbed when there's players left on the pitch that are having less of an influence on the game than you. So, yeah, a lot of people going totally over the top about it. And see, if you just actually want to look at the incident, I mean, I'm not sure he's doing anything other than checking the time or something. He's on his phone for like 5 seconds. I mean, just...
He said it was, he was checking the AC Milan Lille.
Is it Lille?
Is that Lille that's in the group?
Yeah, it is,
yeah. Yeah, he said he was checking the AC Milan Lille score.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, but even then, is it a big deal? No, I remember watching, I mean, okay, it was maybe not great, I think, if you've come off the bench, but like I've seen games where the guys maybe injured that are in the stands that are clearly just basically sitting there flicking through their phone, couldn't care less. But yeah, a lot more was made of it than what it was. But I think LUC was kind of disappointed up until recently, when he has become a little bit of a talisman for Celtic, getting a lot of goals, especially in the absence of guys like Edouard. And yet he's been injured, so it's something that I think he really needed after a kind of a disappointing comeback to date, and it's maybe something that Celtic need is like I say with Edouard, he's his sort of injuries and obviously COVID as well, and generally looking a little uninterested. They maybe do need someone who can go and create and score goals, and maybe it can be him.
I think, to be fair, Rory, you said that they weren't particularly great. I don't think they were at their best by any means, Celtic, but I thought, to be fair to them, they pressed well, were pretty aggressive off the ball. That's, you know, ultimately how they take the lead. I've been pretty critical, not on the podcast so much, of Elie Nussi in the past, and with my anti-Midas touch that I've had recently, where I give a player a slating and then they just turn to gold. That's what's happened with Elie Nussi. I think, to be fair, he's always had a good work rate whenever I've seen him, but he, at times, has lacked a bit of end product. Can't really say that at the minute. He's doing really well for Celtic, so... And yeah, I suppose that comes into why you'd be frustrated, puts a lot into games. But yeah, I thought Celtic did, you know, there was at least some sort of response that Lennon kind of elicited from the players. Didn't think they had to be particularly great against Motherwell here, but yeah, something to hold on to.
Yeah, I think I was maybe a bit harsh. I think they were pretty ruthless. I think that's one thing that they've missed in the past few weeks. But I mean, not to sort of focus entirely on Celtic here, you were kind of going into this game thinking, right, okay, there's Celtic on a pretty stinking run, it'd be interesting, and Motherwell coming into this on a decent run, and you're thinking, right, okay, let's see what they're all about, let's actually see if Motherwell can take this opportunity when Celtic are pretty down on their luck. But it's I mean, it must be pretty deflating that they turn up and it's a 4-1 defeat. Just, I'm not really sure what to say on that sort of thing. It's just, there was part of me that was just expecting this sort of comfortable win for Celtic. It just, a bit disappointed in Motherwell, really. That defensively, they were poor. I thought Chapman in goals was, he was suspect for at least two of the goals. The fourth, I'm a wee bit sort of, I'm not sure why he's so slow in getting down, but, yeah, I thought Motherwell were pretty poor. But to kind of focus on the big picture here with Celtic, it's still only 2 wins out of 7. This win doesn't magically fix what's happened in the past few months, and I'm still thinking that at this stage Lennon's at a point where the next sort of domestic defeat, whether that be in the league or the cup, and then the pressure is seriously back on. I think it's, without again going too far, I think it's a bit of a disgrace how badly they've patched off the Europa League. I think that's pretty small time behaviour, just almost binning that. It's well documented how much of a money spinner any European competition is. I know with the lack of fans, you might sort of lose out in the gate receipts and all that, but the fact that they've just let that European campaign go is just, that's just awful for me. I don't know what they're thinking.
There's no excuse for it. I mean, we talk about, obviously, this is clearly a very important season for Celtic domestically and in the league to get 10 in a row. And it's also important for Rangers, but Rangers have managed to do both and look really, really good in both. I mean, what, Rangers have got 7 points, Celtic have managed to take one, and you could maybe caveat that with the fact that Celtic are up against probably a better quality of opposition with AC Milan, Lyon and Sparta Prague. You could make the argument that Celtic do have the tougher group, but you know, I mean, you know, Benfica aren't exactly a walk. You know, it's not exactly a walk in the park playing against them either. And the same with, you know, Standard Liège and like Poznan. So it's kind of, yeah, I'm a bit baffled as to why, you know, they've patched it to try and make up for it in the league, whereas Rangers have gone all out in every competition. But yeah, it seems weird, and I think the big news of the weekend was obviously Shane Duffy being dropped as well, which I think was totally right. He's been a liability and a bit of a bomb scare almost the entire time he's been here. And Thursday against Sparta Prague, the one when he was just totally sold the wrong way, pretty much summed up his time at Celtic so far.
Yeah.
I feel that there's a pretty considerable difference between the management of the two squads at Rangers and Celtic. I think at Celtic you can kind of see the players that Lennon trusts and the ones that he doesn't. Whereas at Rangers, Gerrard seems happy for, you know, for example, for Bassey to come in at left back, trusts him, Arfield to get a go, Barker as well. You know, all these players are interchangeable. He seems to rely on his entire squad, whereas Lennon just kind of has his favourites and then guys that he just wants to avoid playing at all costs, which is a big problem, especially if you're going into Europe.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of, you can put that down to the atmosphere that both managers have created at their clubs. Lennon seems pretty still old school in that sense, and he wants just to have your guys playing every single week, barely wanting to change the team, whereas Gerrard's created this sort of atmosphere where rotation is the norm. You are going to have games where you're going to drop out. I think they made 5 changes for Sunday from the starting 11, from the game on Thursday night, and you can still produce that sort of performance. And that's just telling the type of manager that Gerrard's kind of become this season. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where both sides go in the next few weeks, with both them playing the teams placed in the third and fourth in the next Premiership round of fixtures. But we'll move on now to the most important sort of matter at hand here, and that's the national team, with the game on Thursday night, the Euro 2020 playoff against Serbia. I think, speaking for myself, this is probably the biggest game I think in my lifetime. I mean, the previous times we've been in the playoffs, I think we would all have been around about, what, 4 or 5, I think? So
we've been older than that. It's 2003, 2006.
Yeah. So we'd all been, well, fairly young, so never really would have been able to grasp it as much as you would have in, say, like 2008 with the qualifiers there.
I do remember watching at least part of the away leg in Holland when we got humped. That was a good laugh.
See, I don't think I was even sort of watching football at that point, so I have very small recollection of that time. It was mainly you kind of look back when you're looking at Scotland campaigns, you always look back at that Euro 2008 one. But I just find this one is just, it's just so enormous, this game on Thursday. It's one where there's been times over the years. I think you look back at Euro 2016 when we were in the qualifiers with Germany, Poland and Ireland, and there was that, we went into that, was it the final game against Poland, and like when we go 2-1 up in that game, it's, there's such, the Hamden's just going mental, but you are still relying on results from elsewhere to sort of secure your fate. And obviously we're in a position here on Thursday where it's totally in our hands, it's up to us, the outcome. And I guess that's that could be when Scotland are at their worst, when they know what to do and it's all down to them. But yeah, it's just such a massive game, and I'm pretty excited for it, to be honest. I think you've got to be pretty anti-national team if you're not looking forward to this game.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is where international football actually get good. I mean, I think there was a fair bit of negativity about what was going on at Scotland, but recently the results have been good. So the positives are that, I mean, we're on a good run of form, if you can call it that, international level, going into this. I think it's a tough ask because, you know, just based on the personnel available to the two squads, assuming that the Serbians do get their big hitters available for this game, you know, there's a bit of a gulf. But the continuity factor, I think, if Steve Clarke kind of sticks to what he's had available to him previously, Ryan Fraser being the obvious omission due to injury, but you've always got a chance because he seems to have found a good system, a way of playing that fits.
Yeah, I mean, before we kind of went on and we're kind of waiting for you to join, Haz, I mean, just say we're kind of looking through the past, well, Serbia's results over almost the past year or so, and there's nothing in there that really jumped out to us to say that they're the almost the elite force that they're kind of being made out to be. We're kind of getting when the draws were made, that it's either going to be Serbia or Norway. If we get past Israel, there was a lot of like, oh Jesus, like that's it, we're doomed. And I'm not sure if a lot of that was focused on the sort of Haaland side of Norway thinking, bloody hell, what could he do to us? But you look through some of the results, and there's, I mean, it's going back almost exactly a year, but they scraped by against Luxembourg at home, a pretty poor defeat at home to Hungary last month. There was a draw with Turkey away last month as well, where they let a 2-goal lead slip. I'm not going to say I'm totally confident here and I think we'll win, but I'm not sure. We're definitely going into this game with a decent chance. I mean, I'd say it's...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's probably about a 60-40 in Serbia's favour, I would say, but it's not... We're totally not going into this as sort of enormous underdogs like we would have been, I don't know, if in that maybe Holland playoff, and what was it? Was that 2003? Was that when that was?
Yes, yeah, it was, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know what your thoughts on that were, Christy.
I don't think that we're massive underdogs. I think that, yeah, it's slightly weighted against us, obviously, having to go over there and play. And I don't know if we're possibly thinking too much about some of the name value of their squad. Obviously, Milinkovic, Savic, Mitrovic, Alexander Kolarov, etc. I don't know if we're thinking too much into that, because obviously, on paper, not that we've really watched too much, we've maybe seen the odd goals and things like that and sort of highlights packages. But there's nothing in their recent results that should put any sort of real fear into us. They've been largely uninspiring average results against nations you'd probably expect them to do a little bit better against. I just think obviously we do need to be wary. Obviously those guys I've mentioned all carry a real threat, but I think at times with Scotland we tend to think more about what the opposition can do to us rather than what we can do to them. And we do now possess a threat. Unfortunately, obviously the Fraser will miss out, but Lyndon Dykes has shown in his brief Scotland career to date that he is a real threat. And when you've got delivery from guys like Andy Robertson and they're running from McGinn from midfield, we do have threats across the pitch. So I think we also need to think about how we can impose our game onto them. And if we do that, that's probably the best chance that we've got in getting a result.
Yeah, you mentioned there about like worrying about opposition, and this is what was kind of getting on my nerves anyway. But the game against Israel is like. And I'm not sure if this is just the commentary on Sky, but they were so obsessed with the guy Zahavi for Israel, and like fine enough, he must be a decent player and stuff like that. But every time he got the ball, it was made out to be like Messi's picked up the ball and this boy who's just gonna absolutely destroy the Scotland defence every time he gets a chance. And it's just the worry, like, and on the sort of flip side, when sort of McGinn or whatever or. Christie or whatever, Forrest or who got the ball in games, it's not sort of a like excitement or something like that. It's just I'm not sure that what the sort of mentality is when it comes to like these games, but I mean
I think that's more of a problem with the commentary, which for Scotland games. Ian Crocker and Davy Proven is wholly uninspiring.
There was part of me, right, that you know how this game's being free to air, that they were just like they just stuck it on the BBC and got like Paul Mitchell back because it's just the watching the highlights before this of some of the previous goals and the Caldwell goal against France and you almost forget that it's Ian McCall on co-commentary and he like makes some. It makes him patter out. He doesn't know how his heart's going to be, how his heart's going to cope for the rest of the game. And you're like, well, it's a bit morbid, Ian, but we'll sort of let that one slide. But yeah, there was part of me that was hoping for that, but that's asking a bit too much. But I mean,
I agree. I think a lot of the media spin is typically very negative. And what you're saying about focusing on the opposition is exactly what I wouldn't want to happen either. But on the flip side, if you want to look at the opposition in a positive sense, when I was doing a bit of reading about Serbia, just over a month ago when this fixture was finalised, read a little bit about the Serbian manager who had some success back in the 90s and early 2000s at Partizan Belgrade, a little bit in China. Of late, the reason he apparently got the Serbia job ultimately was because he was sacked by Montenegro for on political grounds refusing to take a match against Kosovo, which of course there's a fair bit of aggro between those two nations, so apparently that's actually the reason he's in charge of Serbia.
I think there's something in about that as well.
Yeah, not so much about his managerial ability, and yeah, looking at the results, they haven't been particularly good under his reign so far, but yeah, don't want to tempt fate too much, obviously, but I think there's definitely reason to be positive, and another good thing that goes in Scotland's favour is a lot of the players who I would imagine will be starting have been playing first team football for their clubs, and that's of course always a benefit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I heard that that's the reason he's in charge. He doesn't view Kosovo as a country, so he didn't want to play them or something like that.
Doesn't recognise them as a nation.
But while we kind of just criticise focusing solely on the opposition, we're going to briefly, but a couple of star men for Serbia. You can't look any further than Milinkovic-Savic. What was it, a couple of years ago, he was linked with around about like £100 million moves. I think he was, it was AC Milan maybe he was linked with when they were sort of chucking some cash around before financial.
Manchester United as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, who hasn't been linked with Man United? So, but yeah, I think while he's not maybe been the sort of standout, there was a, I think it was a 17-18 where he scored an absolute load of goals for Lazio. But this guy's an elite player. He's going to be the total danger for Serbia. If there was one that you were wanting to miss out through this sort of COVID implications that came about last night, you were hoping it was going to be him because he's going to be the guy to watch out for. If you're looking sort of at like Kolarov, so by all accounts he's been playing as for Serbia anyway, been part of a sort of central part of a back three, and he'd been doing that at Inter Milan this season and has had a torrid time of it apparently. So if he's going to be slotting in there on Thursday, you obviously want to look out for his deliveries and his set piece ability. But in that positional sense, I think that's one that you shouldn't be too concerned about. Any particular players that you guys want to touch on?
Well, mine was kind of where you've gone with Colour of Mine. That's kind of my worry, and as much as I am hugely biased, would be my decision to continue with his Lord and Saviour, Andy Considine, as our left side of centre half. So I just have a fear if we put Tierney back in, I think that if you get Kolarov going up the left hand side and looking to have Mitrovic peel off at the back post, I'd fear a little bit for height wise with Kieran Tierney up against him. From that perspective, obviously we know that Tierney's the better player than Considine, but I just fear that somebody who is as strong in the air as Mitrovic, I do think that you need the height in the back line, and I think that's maybe best with, well, the Constantine or maybe even Liam Cooper as well. But yeah, I'd say him, obviously we've mentioned Milinkovic Savage, and obviously like I just said there, Mitrovic, we're just that ball in the box, he's pretty deadly in the air. And you'll probably be the Delishan playing for a team who might have a chance of winning a game for once, compared to sort of club football.
I mean, I might be wrong in this, but Tierney played in the opening game of the season for Arsenal against Fulham. Oh wait, no, Mitrovic didn't play that game, did he?
He came on as a
sub, so yeah, he wouldn't have played the entire game. I just kind of remembered that, but. I'm not sure if he would have come up against him at some point in the game, but I'm not sure if you would have watched that game at the time, Haz, and picked up on any of that, or if he didn't really.
No, I actually was out and missed that game at the time. However, I would actually agree with Christy about Constantine playing in this game. Again, just for the continuity aspect of it, that's what you'd probably be looking for in a game as big as this. And Mitrovic for Fulham is one thing, but Mitrovic for Serbia is a totally different kettle of fish, because his strike rate is really impressive in international football. 36 goals in 59 games, and by all accounts, Serbia properly play to his strengths. We definitely need to be focusing on the kind of aerial aspect of Serbia's attack, because that is going to be something they look to exploit, and I'd be wary of it too. The other thing I would say is that by all accounts, again, the centre back Milinkovic is highly rated playing at Fiorentina. So if you were
another one that's possibly doubtful that he'll play, even though it does sound like they likely will, but he's another one that could fall into that category if he's maybe not got through that kind of loophole.
He's a bigger risk, I think, because there's I think the situation is a little bit different at Fiorentina, so that could be a situation where he misses out. From a Scotland side of things, it would be a boost because he is regarded as their best centre back. And I think if you have Kolarov, like you said, Rory, involved in a back three, you'd be sitting dykes on him, playing the ball up to him, and I think he'd more often than not get the best of him. But if you've got Milinkovic there, then that's a little bit more of a difficult ask. Big physical centre half.
Yeah, I think what their issue is different sort of health authorities in areas of Italy are sort of are some have sort of placed restrictions on players leaving, and I think Milan hadn't, so I'm not sure if that allowed Kolarov. I'm not sure if he was already there or if he managed to sort of get out sort of quickly. But I think it's Milenkovic, and I'm not sure if there's another guy from Fiorentina who's playing for Serbia, but yeah, I'm not sure, like the Florence Health Authority or whoever have announced that. But more focusing on us, how do you think we can hurt Serbia?
Yeah, I think much the same as the way we've done the last, I'd say, two games. I think it's going to be another one where we're not going to create an awful lot. We are going to be relatively resolute in defence. We are going to sit pretty deep and look to hit teams on the break, and take any chance that comes. I think a lot of probably early deep crossing, and what I've said about us having the threat of, obviously, you know, of them possibly having the threat with Kolarov looking to exploit. Well, as if Tierney was playing, looking to exploit that for Mitrovic. I think it's something that we can do to them. Use Robertson's delivery to have Dykes peel off onto Kolarov at the back post. I think that could be a real threat for us. And the obvious one, if we're going with the three central defenders and all being big, and then you've got Dykes in there as well, would be set pieces. I think that's going to be key. We should have decent delivery from players, depending on players. You've also got guys like McGinn, McGregor, maybe Ryan Christie if he plays. So I think that's probably going to be, you know, counter attacks, deep crossing, and set pieces will probably be our main threats.
Yeah, I think as well, Dykes will be really important from the standpoint of holding up the ball and allowing the likes of McGinn, and I would guess that Christie's probably going to play off of Dykes, but we'll see. But yeah, to bring them into play, because I think getting McGinn on the ball in forward areas is going to be big for Scotland. He's obviously in great form for Aston Villa and has a bit of spark creatively, so that'll be big. I think Dykes, up against some of the previous forwards we've had that are in a similar physical mould, is the best. I mean, obviously it's early in his Scotland career, but the best I've seen from holding up the ball point of view. So hopefully he can do that successfully.
There's obviously been a couple of guys that have returned to the squad. Griffiths, McKenna, Armstrong. Do any of these guys start? We mentioned Christie as well. You said you expect Christie to play. Does McKenna come in for Gallagher, or do you want to change a winning defence?
I don't want to change that, no. And yeah, I think obviously Christie comes in. I'd maybe think of Stuart Armstrong, just because I think that when we play, let's say, we've been playing Brian Jack and Callum McGregor and together, it's been so. We've both been playing the same role, and it's just too similar. Neither of them want to be looking to go forward with the ball. They're always looking to go sideways and backwards. And I think having someone a bit more progressive, a bit more forward thinking, who still has the energy and defensive capabilities, could do some good.
Yeah, I don't know what the sort of the deals with Armstrong, because I massively rate him as a player. I think he's one of our best midfielders, but he just doesn't really seem to be getting a look in when he is selected for the squads, and he's obviously a guy that must be pretty sort of tactically aware when you're playing for a guy like Hasenhüttl at Southampton, who does have sort of strong requirements on his players tactically. But yeah, I would quite like to see him start. There's just this part of me that is dying for a free kick in the sort of the 89th minute, and Griffiths is on the pitch, and it would just be such a sort of poetic moment of getting us to the Euros. But
he's definitely going to be left as an impact sub. I think Steve Clarke in the all these sort of press conferences has made that fairly clear. But on your point about Armstrong, is I think he's looked down upon by plenty of the Scotland fan base just for that single moment against England, and people have never really, you know, forgotten or possibly even forgiven about that, which is, to me, is ridiculous, because he's turned in a number of good performances since then, scored some, I think he scored a couple of games, you know, in a few games after it as well. But yeah, I think that, like you said there, I mean, if there's nobody in that team I'd want more in that position if we get a late free kick that can send us through than Lee Griffiths.
Yeah, so just to round up, predictions, what do we think? Are we going to do it, or is it going to be glorious failure yet again?
I don't want to tempt fate. I am feeling relatively positive as we approach the game, but even as I say that, I just kind of feel like we're going to come up just short, and I'd probably go for a very tight 2-1 win for Serbia.
It's a heart and head moment, isn't it?
Yeah,
I want to believe we could go there and win, but it just feels all too Scotland.
It's gonna be sort of butterflies in the stomach stuff. On a Thursday, I feel. But you know what? Fuck it, I'm going for it. We are going to the Euros, baby.
Yeah, I'm relatively confident. I think it's going to be a long one again. I think it could be extra time, but it's as cliched as it is, I don't really care how we do it, as long as we do it. I saw Chris Boyd saying Scotland will sneak in through the back door. I mean, I can't remember the playoffs being the back door. It's always been a pretty normal route to the competition, so there's absolutely no shame.
Well, I mean, you do think of it in that sense, it seems a little bit like that, because obviously, I know this has come from the Nations League, but our actual qualification for this tournament was a bit of a failure, with obviously the main one being that kind of that loss in Kazakhstan, being the main one. But yeah, I mean, obviously, but you know, we earned this position through that Nations League group, so we are where we deserve to be, and hopefully we can take that one last step that's eluded us for the last 20 odd years, and get ourselves to that where we're desperate to see Scotland return to, which, conveniently, none of us has ever actually seen.
Yeah, and probably won't see if we do it. But I mean, we'll kind of finish up there. So it's worth remembering as well, the Nations League games over the week, or next Sunday and on Wednesday, they have pretty high importance too, because if we win both them, I think we're almost confirmed as the Nations League sort of playoff system for the World Cup. So they're not totally meaningless games as well, but obviously, the game on Thursday is the big one. So, I mean, probably be listening to We Have a Dream getting pumped up before the game. So,
I'm gonna have the tunes going all day. Is he still alive? I can't remember, but they definitely, and I know there's not gonna be fans there, but they definitely just get Ronnie DeCorey in the building. Get the anthem song, or at least put up the video of them singing it, kind of around that sort of 2006, 2007 time, mid 2000s. Get everyone hyped.
I think Ronnie Brown. I think he's still alive. Aye, he's he's retired though, but I'm sure you can.
Right.
I'm sure you could bring him out of retirement for this one off. But I'm not sure if I fully went in with a prediction, but yeah, I think we'll win 1-0 somehow.
I'm going to go penalties. I think it's going to be a long, like you said, it's going to be a real slog.
It's one thing you trust Steve Clark to do is keep it tight. I don't think we're, I mean, again, don't want to tempt fate here, but I don't think we're going to get smashed.
No, I think that's, I mean, yeah, we could be tempting fate, but I can't really see us going over there and getting pumped like 3-0 and it's game over with 30 minutes to play and we're all thinking, oh, well, here we go again. But hopefully not. Hopefully we're all upbeat come sort of whatever time it finishes on Thursday night. But yeah, we'll be back sort of next week, I guess, to look back on, hopefully, I mean, Scotland at the Euros, it doesn't even bear thinking, but hopefully that's the case. But yeah, as always, thanks for listening and we'll see you next week.